Greetings and welcome to another edition of Soundography, the Soundography special. You gotta listen to this, where we pick a podcasting luminary, a colleague, a friend, and we ask them to make us listen to any album of their choosing. I'm Brian Ibbett.
And I am Hammond Chamberlain.
And today our special guest on the show is one Mr. Justin Robert Young. Welcome, jury, to the show.
Man, it's good. It's good to be here. I don't get a lot of chances to talk music, but I always love talking music with you guys. So I'm excited to be here.
Well, that's an interesting point you bring up, because I had you on an episode of Cover a little while back. I think we were talking about Anthem Rock. And then
isn't that the longest episode of Coverville ever?
It might be.
That sounds likely. I am the elongator of podcasts.
Right, exactly. If you need filler, if you need to stretch out a podcast,
yeah, I'm like the packing peanuts of audio.
Well, the packing peanuts are like meat.
They're made of Cheetos.
It's not like they're not throwaway fluff. It's like
exactly.
you're dropping meat bombs on us.
Yeah. If packing peanuts were Dinty Moore beef stew cubes, that would be mean.
Exactly. Now, but talking about music, it's funny you bring that up, that you don't really get a chance to talk about music. And that actually reminds me of something that I was going to ask you about, because in all the times that we've talked about music, I don't even know where your sweet spot is. Are you a 70s music guy? Are you an 80s music guy? Are you a 90s music guy? I'm tending to think maybe an 80s, but primarily a 90s music guy. But the genres, I can, again, kind of suspect that maybe you're not a pop country fan. Maybe your tastes lean more towards the rock and the punk and that sort of thing. But let's talk about that. Like, where's the jury sweet spot for music?
So I think unsurprisingly, most of my music taste was kind of formed in my childhood and adolescence and early 20s, as most people are. I am very firmly in the point in my life where I now realize that I don't know who is playing at any of these festivals unless there's a old act that I liked when I was in college.
Right.
Playing. So my music taste has kind of fossilized a little bit. But in general, I think when I was growing up, my mom was always really into pop radio. So I've always had an appreciation and enjoyment of pop radio, but specifically the genres that were popular as I was growing up were rock was very much having a renaissance post glam and hair metal, so I was far more in the grunge rock, demo, the birth of sort of pop punk, probably. So however you would categorize Green Day, leading and Rancid and stuff like that, leading into Blink-182. But I kind of dropped off of that. I feel like there's my friends that are a little bit younger than me, like 3 to 5 years younger than me, really got the full dose of the pop punk thing and leading into the kind of that new emo revolution that happened in the late 90s, early aughts.
Right.
That's like the My Chemical Romance and stuff like that.
Sure.
Otherwise known as the Children of the Corn.
Yeah. But for me, really, it was that kind of rock. Gangster rap was a huge part of my childhood and adolescence, and something that I've always had a real appreciation for, hip hop and rap. And then aughts indie, like that aughts indie boom of Decemberists and Postal Service and Death Cab and right. stuff like that is something that I really, Belle and Sebastian, like those bands are that whole scene is something that I really do appreciate, like Yola Tango and TV on the Radio.
Very cool. Wow. Okay. So still, even within that, I mean, that's diverse. And I guess we all kind of have that, our own kind of diversity, whether it's Britpop or punk or rock or whatever. And there's all those different shades of it, going from, like you said, like the Metallica and the grunge, all the way up to the gangster rap, but also the Mumford and Sons, like these little spidery tendrils that go off in every direction.
Yeah. The Spock's beard to the Dream Theater.
Okay. You've gotten your reference in. You've gotten your Dream Theater mention in.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think part of it is just being surrounded by a lot of different influences, and you know, I was kind of around for the last dying days of rock radio. And so that was kind of the radio that I really appreciated and enjoyed was in South Florida. It was 94.9 Zeta, the rock radio station down there that, you know, once that died, I think there might be a rock radio station back now in South Florida, but, you know, that then fading into, you know, the rap music on, you know, Power 96 or 99 Jams. And then I go back one day, you know, now all of a sudden there's Lady Gaga on Power 96 and it's like, wow, I guess rap radio's dead. You know,
that was, yeah, right.
that used to be the thing that was like, oh, rap radio's killing the rock radio. And now it's like, no, pop is literally just eating everything.
Everything. Yeah.
And now I feel like they're like radio's kind of in a really interesting place because you're like the business is kind of cratered to such an extent that now there are frequencies that are just kind of taking chances and just doing random stuff, which I think is pretty cool. Mm-hmm. Just because they're not the playlist radio or the iHeart radio monolith.
Well, and they got to do something. I mean, they're getting eaten alive by people listening to their own music, right? Listening to whether it's Pandora, Spotify, Apple Music, whatever, making their own radio stations, making their own playlists from the music they've either bought or downloaded or streamed or ripped from their CDs if they're old like me. But yeah. It's become so DIY that radio has certainly suffered because of that. Whether it's pop, country, rap, whatever, it's all.
I will say I was never really a country guy, and then randomly this year over the Christmas holiday, I got really into a country music history podcast called Cocaine and Rhinestones that I love and got me way into country music. And that it focuses all on music of the 20th century, but kind of going from some way older stuff to a lot of like the Bakersfield sound.
Oh, cool.
They did a great, great episode about Bobby Gentry. That was amazing. It was just so kind of cinematic and such a fun kind of tour of just the gems of like just great, great, great story songwriting that country music is kind of.
Did they ever explain what they threw off the Tallahatchie Bridge in talking about Bobby Gentry?
Unsurprisingly, so much of the episode does focus on her breakout song there.
To Billy Joe. Yeah.
Yeah. The Ballad of Billy Joe. It's a MacGuffin, right? Even at that point, the idea that somebody would introduce something so cinematic,
right,
to a country song, was just kind of next level, and it just it drove people crazy that no one knew what was thrown off the Tallahatchie Bridge.
That's an era of country that I think a lot of people can appreciate. George Jones and kind of the early Willie Nelson stuff and Patsy Cline and all that, where it's the foundations of country, and even like stuff like Johnny Cash, who would kind of walked the line, but also straddled that line between rock and country and quite a few people.
Yeah. And you realize, you know, they did a whole episode or two episodes on Buck Owens, right? And his guitar player and his band and kind of the, unsurprisingly, a lot of these country stories ended tragedy.
Yeah.
There's a great, the Buck Owens episodes were amazing. It just didn't realize how much, you know, look, Act Naturally was, you know, written by somebody else, but performed as a hit by Buck Owens. And that's something that the Beatles, it was one of the most recognizable Beatles songs, you know?
Right. Everybody thinks that it's Ringo Starr, that, and I Can Help. Like they hear his voice immediately. Ringo covered it, but I mean, everybody always associates it with the Beatles and not as a Buck Owens thing.
Yeah, but you realize how influential that sound was and how influential that writing. I can't speak highly enough about Cocaine and Rhinestones. I think everybody go ahead and give that one a spin. And if you guys haven't listened to it, I would highly
definitely we'll check that out. Well, all right, let's jump over then from
Cocaine and Rhinestones
to the album that you chose for us, and tell us what that album is, Jerry,
and why.
I will say that there is a element of, I don't want to say intimidation, that I had when I know specifically, and Hammond, I don't know as much of your music bona fides, but I assume if Brian is doing a show with you, for somebody that is so ingrained and has such a knowledge of music, that I didn't want to pick something that was predictable.
Mainstream predictable, sure, right.
Yeah. I wanted to pick an album that I loved dearly at a very specific point in my musical education, that had a funny reason why I started listening to it, and is something that I gave a re-listen before I suggested it, and I just immediately fell in love with it again.
Awesome.
And that is, and I guess I've been saying this name wrong my entire life. I guess I've never heard anybody say it.
I would have as well. Right. I know. I would have as well until we kind of read some of the back history on it. But
so I know they are Green Jello.
Yes.
I have said their name as Green Jelly because I had always assumed that they had to go by Green Jelly because they were sued by the Jell-O company. Exactly. Or got a C&D from the Jell-O company.
Yes.
But the album is Serial Killer, spelt like the crunchy breakfast treat.
That's exactly right. Yeah, in researching this, finding out that their original name was Green Jell-O with the umlauts over the O. Again, as you mentioned, the Jell-O Corporation said, sorry, can't do that. And their comeback was changing the spelling of the name, but not the pronunciation. So it's spelled Green Jelly with umlauts over the Y, but still pronounced Green Jell-O. And you know what? I'm going to be calling it them Green Jelly and Green Jell-O interchangeably, I'm sure, throughout this whole episode. So if you do that too, no big deal. I don't think anybody here is worried about factual pronunciation accuracy and you got to listen to this.
No, for sure.
So album came out in 1993. Give me some of the background. How did you discover this? Because there's a couple distinctive ways that you could have landed on this album, and I want to know which of those two ways
and Night Attack fans will know that there is a track on our first comedy album that I tell a story where when I was in kindergarten, one of my uncles, who we euphemistically named Uncle Bilbo, picked me up in his Corvette and took me blazed out of his mind to go play laser tag. It was a fundamental moment in my life that I remember vividly to this day. It taught me so much about what it means to live.
Right.
And I am grateful and in his debt to this day. But another gift that my dear Uncle Bilbo gave to me was this album, because he knew I was a huge fan of Green Day, and he was buying me a Christmas present literally at the 11th hour on Christmas Eve and bought me a CD of Green Jelly.
Oh, that's hilarious. Okay. All right.
So I got this album by mistake and fell in love with it.
Wow. All right. That's amazing. That's not at all what I was expecting.
So I bought it day and date release at the BYU bookstore.
What? You did too? Really? Uh-huh. You're familiar with this?
Yeah.
Oh my God. All right. Well, I'm the only one coming into this kind of brand new. I mean, I've heard of them through the Tool show that we did, because there's some connections there. But prior to that, I'm amazed that I'd never heard about Green Jell-O.
Especially with their cover they do.
What's that?
Especially with the cover they do.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I know. Again, a cover of Anarchy in the UK by the Sex Pistols, sort of.
Yeah.
yeah, amazing. Amazing.
So the interesting part that I found before we jump into the album was that they're known for their sophomoric humor, theatrical performance, intentionally crude musicianship, which is very true because they're playing a lot worse than they really are. And every now and then on this album, the glimmers of true talent that these guys have poke through and they can't hide it. They've had hundreds of members over the course of their lifetime since they formed in 81.
Yeah, it seems like just kind of this...
It's almost like a commune of musicians.
Yeah, like the lead singer seemingly just kind of understands that this is just a waypoint, right?
Like, right. Yeah.
Like it's like a pickup basketball game. Like whoever's here for the gig, just come on over.
It's like the Menudo of California punk.
Well,
because this album is a perfect example of that. It has Pauly Shore on it.
Mm. Yeah. No, it's literally a whoever's hanging out.
Right, exactly. Hey, you want to be on a track? Yeah, sure, cool. Now, in looking around at this and listening, I listened to it through the first time just on Apple Music, just because it was there. And then did some looking around online about it and found out about the video, that it actually started as kind of a combined multimedia project of being an album and a long form music video. So immediately switched from listening to the album to saying, oh, I'm going to watch all these videos. And for a bunch of guys who, I guess what I found out is correct, for a bunch of guys who've never done this sort of thing before, they do an amazing job with puppetry and stop motion animation and costumes and special effects and things like that. That is amazing for a band, like you said, that's never done this before.
Well, I kind of also think that, and I don't know, this is what I've just kind of always assumed about them, is that they're very much like a lot of just sort of projects that bubble up in LA, where LA, because even if you are the best at your job, right, in show business, you are in a gig economy. Like, you have a gig, the gig ends, and then you're farting around until you get another gig, right? And if you are trying to find something, then you are prone to just do random stuff with your friends just so, you know, you can continue to express what you're doing. And it doesn't shock me that there is that kind of skill with an LA-based band, in the same way that it would shock me if it was, let's say, a Boise-based band, right?
They're in the right place. Like, they're in the location where these random people that would show up and they'd say, hey, you want to be in this music video? One of them would say, oh, you know, I do stop-motion animation. Can I pitch in that way? Or
yeah, exactly. Or it's like, you know, people are fans of metal, right? And they go to metal shows and there's this band that does fun metal stuff and they're like, oh, yeah, well, I can help you with that.
Hey, you know. Jury, Brian, are you guys familiar with the band Psychofunkapus?
No,
I'm not.
Okay, they did it. They released an album in like 91, maybe 92, called Skin. And has a song on there called The Hillbilly Happy Smash. And it's a lot of fun to listen to. I recommend it very highly. And the whole time I was listening to this album, like, these guys are cut from the exact same cloth, but Psychofunkapus never got to the point where Green Jelly did.
Gotcha. Okay. Interesting. So, yeah, I'd never
for the four people who've heard of the Hillbilly Happy Smash, high fives.
They're all of them just pointed at their iPhones going, oh my God,
yeah.
somebody else knows about those guys.
Yeah.
Those guys.
I should also point out that the other thing that cemented my love for Green Jelly was that they did the soundtrack for the Maximum Carnage video game, the Spider-Man video game. And like now, so
Spider-Man, let me in.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden I start playing this video game because I love Spider-Man, and it's, listen up, you fools. Don't you know that carnage rules? And there's like soundtrack by Green Jelly at the beginning. And it was amazing. So like, I felt it was divine providence that I had found this band.
Right. Oh, that's great. Cause then I played that game. So absolutely have heard them before and just didn't realize I was hearing them before. That's amazing.
All right. So this album sold 14 million copies worldwide.
Wow.
Just
what?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my God. What was the music industry? No wonder they were getting so fat.
It had to be. I mean, that's all like word of mouth. Oh dude, you got
that when, I mean, that's what is,
that's based on one song basically.
So wait, hold on. What are the distinctions for like the platinum is what?
Oh yeah. What is the, a billion copies is platinum? No, what is, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what mark you have to hit for platinum.
So if you have a gold record, record is,
I think it's a million.
Gold is a million.
Okay. I think so.
Oh, here we go. I've got the,
got, and the then record. What? 100 million is diamond, right?
Must be. All right. So certification thresholds in the United States, gold is 500,000 copies. Platinum is 1 million copies. Diamond is 10 million copies.
10 million. Okay. Okay.
So, but this was worldwide, not just in the States. This was all over the place.
Well, and in France, it's 50,000, 100,000, and 500,000. It's considerably less. Canada, 40,000, 80,000, 800,000.
Well, that explains why, what is it? Tragically Hip is so popular.
Right? It's a lot easier to be gold certified in Canada than it is.
And so wait, so how many did this sell?
14 million US. Worldwide.
Yeah, so that's diamond. And it's the same whether it's an album or a single. 100 or 10 million is the same.
So this is a worldwide diamond album.
Yeah,
which blows my mind.
What the hot ham water is going on in the 90s?
Right? Yeah, exactly. Not a lot of competition. I don't know. I mean, it, you know, grunge was popular, and that had to be the thing. It had to be like,
it was a combination of that video.
Cool thing in college to own this album.
Yeah, it was that video and the fact that it was the cool thing to own until Bill Cosby came after him with a cease and desist.
But usually stuff like this, because it's so underground, you don't have people going to the record store and buying a copy. You have people duping a copy for their friends and recording a copy of the video with the one guy in their frat house that has a dual VHS recorder thing.
But I bought it on CD at the BYU bookstore. So it gotten pretty permeated because it cracked BYU.
Wow. Amazing.
I mean, look, it was certainly available enough for my uncle to mistakenly buy it for me.
Right. Exactly. So the original version was just called Serial Killer, released in 1991. They re-released it in 1993 and renamed it the Serial Killer soundtrack, I guess, just so that they could disambiguate it from the video, from the VHS tape, which is, again, like I said, take some time. Check it out on YouTube, at least some of the videos. Check out the Anarchy in the UK, Flintstones. Check out the, all right, Trippin' on XTC. We got to talk about this one.
Well, let's just go track by track, and that way we don't miss anything.
If there's anything, right, okay, and jump in. I mean, we'll just go track by track, but jump in when there's something you want to talk about with one of these. Starting with Obey the Cowgirl.
I feel like it's a good opener. It gives you a feel what you're going to get. Also, they really are far better musicians than they are letting on.
Yeah, I think so. And it's interesting they don't begin with the thing that begins the video, which is the Green Jelly theme song. They stick that at the very end, even though on the VHS cassette, apparently the theme song is at the very beginning. Next one is Three Little Pigs. This is the great stop motion animation, Big Bad Wolf and the Three Little Pigs, that for some reason also includes Rambo. Then one day, jamming on some chords, along came the wolf, knocking on his door. Little pig, let me in. By the hair of my chinny chin. Little pig, let me in. By the hair of my chinny chin. Here's
the best thing about that, though. It was the director was the same guy who did Sober video for Tool.
Oh, really? Okay, so more connections to mm-hmm. Tool, the drummer, vocalist, and the video guy.
And again, yeah. I mean, I think this was, they did this track, and then on another album, they did the Bear Went Over the Mountain.
Right, yes.
But this, that became, I think, probably their biggest calling card was these like children's songs. It was almost like, you know, the precursor to like the bluegrass version of you know, an Eazy-E song, right?
Yes, right. No, I think you're right.
Or Korn, you know, doing the nursery rhymes.
Exactly. Oh no, totally. Wow. No. I didn't even put two and two together on that. But yeah, no, totally. I mean, this was way before that. I mean, yeah. I would be shocked if this was not some kind of inspiration for Korn.
Mm-hmm. Right. And Me First and the Gimme Gimmes had to be an inspiration to those guys as well. The metal covers, the punk covers of mellow songs.
But the other thing about this, the Three Little Pigs thing, because this, unlike the Bear Went Over the Mountain, which is Bear Went Over the Mountain is just their, like, it's literally just the lyrics, but with their instrumentation. This is kind of very evocative of that kind of 90s, what would go on to kind of become the 90s sort of, F you dad, you know, reality bites kind of Generation X detached.
Yeah.
Kind of lyricism applied to this Three Little Pigs tale.
Yep. Pig Nugent pays the bills, just so you know.
No, totally. I mean, not just lyrically, musically as well. I mean, this is the thing that your parents are yelling at you through the door to turn down because it's it's distracting them from Matlock or whatever they're watching.
Yeah.
It's absolutely rebellion music, both lyrically and musically. And I love that. Absolutely love it.
But also very evocative, right? Like this is not, you know, very much kind of an answer to, even though kind of musically there's a lot of the kind of driving guitars and percussion of kind of the metal of the late 80s and 90s. In terms of the lyricism, this isn't like, you know, rock and roll, let's get wasted and get laid.
Right.
This is like, hey man, whatever, like you're a vapid piece of garbage, and you know, like the world sucks and no one's going to have a job forever, you know. There's I think that's something that we saw so much more of with grunge, while this sounds so much more like metal.
Well, that's right. The thing that's really interesting is the next song itself really made me look at the dates when this was released, because the solo during Serial Killer sounds a lot like 84, 86 era Metallica. I mean, there's a lot of Kurt Hammett flowing through the veins of this guitar player, because it sounds like they pulled it out of a lost, drunk, humorous session of Metallica recordings. Because it's, I mean, it sounds just like it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the Serial Killer, obviously, I think kind of the single from the album, there may be this and Electric Harley, House of Love, probably the two most popular tracks from this album. Based on doing a search for their music, these seem to be the two things that come up the most, although Three Little Pigs came up first when I just did a quick search. But
although by the way, let's also point out that Three Little Pigs does feature guest vocals by Maynard James Keenan, right? Of Tool, and Pauly Shore.
Yeah, Pauly Shore. Right.
Oh, and Les Claypool.
Yeah. Well, and we'll skip ahead a little bit, but spoiler alert, the Green Jello theme could easily be a Primus song.
Easily.
Oh, yeah.
There's so many Primus connections in here too, musically, not just members of the band, but they're, again, you know, you do a search for this on YouTube, you start watching this, they start interjecting Tool videos, they start interjecting Primus videos the further down you get. So,
And I'll throw this in, the drummer, Danny Carey, he also worked with King Crimson. So it's not like he can only do this kind of stuff. He can do all kinds of stuff. Yeah.
All right, it's a little prog connection there too. Wow. All right, I'll take it. But the Serial Killer track, I think one of my favorite tracks on the album.
Silly rabbit. Tricks are for kids!
Basically giving us Toucan Son of Sam killing off the Tricks Rabbit, Lucky the Leprechaun, Snap, Crackle, and Pop. I can't imagine that there was... Oh, yeah, and even throwing in like a little MIDI cover of Popcorn by Hot Butter for good measure.
Yeah.
I can't imagine there were any cease and desist that would have come from this.
I mean, look, did lawyers not exist in the early 90s? I guess this is just the first time we're like, I mean, these guys are just glue sniffers in L.A. And who gives a rat's ass or whatever?
Really, these guys aren't that far away from what Weird Al Yankovic was doing. So this
No. I mean, really, the key here is the musicianship, right? And the fact that obviously, look, I mean, when we're talking about, you know, they're in the same, you know, gene pool as Tool and Primus. It's mm-hmm. like, okay, well, we're not far away from the kind of sounds that really define the next decade of rock music. That and not to take anything away from the musicianship of Weird Al, but even now, he kind of owes a lot. He's still the same artist that was on Dr. Demento.
Yeah.
Right. You know? Yeah. Right. Yeah, no, and definitely that underground following and you know, what these guys had as well. But yeah, the parody thing is super, super popular in punk circles with punk covers, punk parodies, and even just pop culture references. You get a lot more of that in punk than you probably would expect.
Yeah.
Suicidal Tendencies and, you know, All I Wanted Was a Pepsi and Dead Kennedys and the Dead Milkman and stuff like that. I mean, it's
a whole lot of dead.
It's true. apparently, by the way, they did get some lawsuits because of Serial Killer, the song. And now when they perform it, or when whatever Green Jello is performing as performs it, it's now Pelican Sam instead of Toucan Sam.
Oh, really?
Well, because yes. Captain Crunch was felt bad because he was left out.
Kind of was, yeah. Yeah, I was thinking that was the general at the beginning, but it definitely wasn't Captain Crunch. Rock and Roll Pumpkin, the next track on the album. Then, of course, we get to Anarchy in the UK, which is sort of a Sex Pistols cover, but also a little bit of a parody with a whole Flintstones thing in there, which is fantastic, especially in the video. Man, the papier-mâché that they went through to make all the videos for this thing, giant Fred Flintstone heads with the mohawks and Barney Rubble and pebbles and stuff like that. The girls in the band, or whether they're in the band or whether they're just kind of added percussion or eye candy for the music videos, always, by the way, having these ginormous papier-mâché bras too, with bones sticking out of them or skulls or whatever. But great, great in that Anarchy in the UK video. Electric Harley, House of Love, as we mentioned, that's the one that's got, who is it on vocals on that one? It's Carey, no, it's, let's see here, pulling it up, Danny Carey, yeah, Danny Carey on drums, mm-hmm. and Maynard James Keenan on vocals.
So it also had members of Kiss, and it made reference, like, name drops from Kiss songs. And in the video, they're wearing Kiss-like costumes.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Metallica, yeah. too.
Well, and also the other thing that's really interesting is that the very beginning of the song is a very clear homage to Hotel California.
I didn't pick up on that.
Yeah, you want to know what? I mean, this is also, you know, kind of a moment when these, like, you know, it kind of feels like there is a pop culture tsunami, like a pop culture synthesis. And I mean, this is also, I mean, it's 93. At this point, you know, Reservoir Dogs were to come out, Pulp Fiction would be released a year later. Like, and also there's, I don't know whether it's like, because cable is now more widespread and these old, I mean, that really the idea before cable and HBO, you know, once a movie or you know, the MTV had now been an institution. But once that stuff came and went, it came and went forever, right? Mm-hmm. And now all of a sudden there is just this moment of, no, all of pop culture all at once, right? Like, we're just going to drop everything into everything and see what fits, if even just for the novelty of it.
That feels like, right, it was the mission statement for Night Flight.
The old video music program.
Yeah.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, even MTV in those early days, I mean, they were showing this on MTV, and they had to pull it because of that Enter Sandman riff that they were that they played as part of Electric Harley House.
Yep.
But yeah, I mean, everyone forgets that prior to all the reality show stuff, and even the whole joke of like, oh, I remember back when MTV used to play music videos. They used to play some underground music videos. It wasn't all, hey, who's the current list of pop stars? They played some really bizarre stuff in those early days.
Because they were looking for just content. And so Angry Dwarves decided they were going to make two videos, they got played.
They got played, right. They submitted stuff in, and MTV said, yeah, sure, we might save this for after 9 p.m., but we'll definitely play it.
I mean, how else could Rock Me Amadeus become a big hit? With it weren't for that, looking for content.
Hey, don't you slag on Falco.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, now we're going to get to Trippin' on XTC, which I was hoping when I saw the title of it, that it was going to be some sort of XTC parody or... cover or something, but I like it. I think I like it even more that it's a Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Yeah, right.
Parody. And man, do they bring the it's like funk that they just apparently had in their back pocket and said, we're only going to show this stuff on Trip on NXTC.
Hey, Les, channel your inner Flea and go.
Right. Right. It's way more apparent in the music video with like all the, like pretty much ripping on Anthony Kiedis in the music video, but so good. I think this is my favorite track on the album.
Where were Red Hot Chili Peppers in their career?
Yeah, I know, because this seems to be,
weren't they doing
is this just like local LA beef? Like,
it must be, right? Because Blood Sugar Sex Magik was 90 was it? No, 91. So it would have been right around this time. Actually,
okay. So they are just popping.
Yeah.
With Blood Sugar Sex Magik.
They are. So this has got to be, you know, oh, these guys are so big, they've sold out. They're no more Mother's Milk or Mojo or whatever.
This is it's green like, Jello dish track.
It really is. It totally is. Yeah. I mean, coming from the same area, Hollywood, California, it's,
what would you guys say? Obviously in hip hop, it's commonplace, but just rock and roll, I'm just crapping on another band song.
First thing that comes to mind is Sweet Home Alabama, right? Because they rip on Neil Young
and Southern Man.
His song Southern Man, right?
Yeah.
Trying to think of some other ones. I mean, there's...
But even then, that's not really ripping on Southern Man as a song, right?
No. No,
it just says like, hey, F you, Neil.
Right, exactly. A Southern Man doesn't need you around anyhow, right?
Yeah.
But, yeah. Do you count any of the the supposed Taylor Swift, Katy Perry?
I mean, sure. I guess that's the thing, is like, it just doesn't really happen in rock music.
Yeah,
right?
You don't hear Metallica, you know, throwing shade at Anthrax.
Yeah, I mean, like, you hear plenty of stories in interviews and on the road and stuff like that. Like you hear a lot of beef kind of like internally.
You know, there's a lot of it. There was a fair amount with all the Beatles solo stuff, because there were, I think each of the members, at least George and John, both had songs crapping on Paul McCartney, like How Do You Sleep and Wah Wah by George Harrison. Both are apparently big jabs at McCartney's perfectionism. Yeah. Maybe not as blatant, but boy, I mean, when you get it within the same band saying, I'm leaving, and by the way, I'm kicking you on the way out with this.
I mean, probably the biggest track. Diss tracks in rock music history were all Friendly Fire from Fleetwood Mac, right?
Right, within the chain, and totally. Go Your Own Way is a big diss track.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's all just them, like making money by whooping on each other.
It became, like, their biggest singles. Yeah, totally. Love that.
You don't hear Journey right, crapping on Boston.
The Journey versus Boston?
Yeah.
Do we need that?
Oh, God, I would have loved if that would have gotten just like real angry stuff in that easy.
Or even a Steve Perry ripping, throwing shade on Pineda, the new Steve Perry sounding vocalist of Journey, I think would be great. moving on to Misadventures of Shitman, which I think has one of the best music videos from 1991 ever made. You know everybody knows they can smell it with their nose. It's poo-poo, poo-poo. I've got poo-poo on my shoe. I've got poo-poo on my shoe. It's poo-poo, poo-poo. But first...
Okay, so is it me, or does he not sound like he's channeling his inner Dave Mustaine during this album, the song?
Oh, I could hear that. Yeah.
Oh yeah. No, totally. Jeez, I get. And where was Megadeth at this point?
They had just done. They had just done maybe Holy War, something like that. Maybe.
So is this album, maybe this album is got an even deeper level. I mean, we knew the parody level and the rock talent level, but maybe there's also another thing. We're like, all right, now let's rip on the Chili Peppers. Now let's kind of channel some.
I mean, it's just all crapping on LA bands, right? So Megadeth would 90 to 91 would be Rust in Peace. And then 92 to 93 was Countdown to Extinction.
Yeah. Because
this is probably reacting to Rust in Peace, which is one of the biggest.
Yeah, because Cryptic Writings came out in like 96.
Hmm. Yeah.
There you go. Well,
so Adventures of Shitman sounds like something. It sounds like Scott and Carter need to draw and animate this series, though.
I don't think that they need to be exposed to this.
We don't need to taint the Johnsons with green jello.
Taint the Johnsons.
They can find it organically. We don't need to be introducing it to them.
Thrusting it upon them. House of Me, Teenage Rave, which was, all right. I mean, kind of a, for me, it was kind of like a, let's get to the next one.
Okay, so I will tell you, this one reminded me of You'll Dance to Anything by the Dead Milkmen.
Oh, okay.
The monkey, baby. Say hi. Say hi to the monkey. The monkey likes you.
Sure, I can see that.
It also started like an early 1990s chiptune song.
It was also the only one out of the music videos that I could only hear audio. Like there was no, I could not find the music video for House Me Teenage Rave.
Also, I don't know if I was old enough for this song.
Old enough for it?
Yeah, lots of spanking and tying them up. And
oh, sure.
Halfway through, I'm like, I don't know if I'm old enough for this.
See, there we go. We've tainted him and Chamberlain, too.
Yeah. Exactly. And they were selling it at the BYU.
The BYU, they were. Right? Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Was this pre-parental advisory sticker? Or
I
was
think
that
it was.
Ooh, that's a good idea. When did Tipper Gore get her sticker on?
That was 86. It was after, because I wrote a paper on that when I was in school my freshman year.
Did you really?
Because I was that much of a boat rocker at BYU.
Wow. Look at you.
First introduced by the RIAA in 85.
85. Okay. So this one, it had to be like... drilled in with like machine screws onto the cover, getting that parental advisory sticker. We want to make sure you know what's going on.
Yeah, exactly. We just need everybody to know that this is lit and you need to buy it immediately.
Right. Did you know other people at BYU who were listening to this, or were you kind of the outlier? I was
always the outlier. I had the Iron Maiden posters in my dorm room. I listened to Dr. Rock at night because if he doesn't leave a scar, it wasn't successful. I mean, I was not your typical BYU guy by any stretch. I was playing in a bar band off campus. You know, Sunday
now,
nights.
Now, were you? Is this like you're blaring it through the dorm, or are you headphones only?
Depends on the day and what I was listening to. If someone was blaring a whole lot of NXS, I'd match them.
Ah, gotcha. So you would fight fire with
competition.
Fire. Right. I would fight fire with fire, exactly, because that came out of Metallica's Kill 'Em All album.
Yeah. And how about you, Jerry? Were you, since Bilbo introduced this to you accidentally, thinking it was going to be Dookie?
Sure.
And there is Dookie on the cover, so I guess I kind of see.
There is poop on the cover, yeah.
Were you the guy who was introducing this to everybody in your...
No, you know, I was... This was kind of prior... I mean, geez,
Let me throw a correction in. It's off Ride the Lightning, It's Night, Kill 'Em All. Hold Dream.
I was 10. It came out on my birthday.
Oh, wow.
My 10th birthday, March 5th, 1983.
Okay, I was 20-something, so that tells me.
So this was kind of prior to me sort of sharing with my – I had yet to kind of – build up a musical sharing community. Mm-hmm. That was more a little bit later. Right. But this was certainly something that I enjoyed personally. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, I'm loving this. And it tells me so much, Jerry, about you. I can imagine you as a kid listening to this. It's hilarious. Flight of the Skajiquada.
Well, soon the worst will come to pass. Turn your roads to glass. While in the north, the beast awakens from his year-long slumber taken. His howl, the fury of the gales.
Which has another great snowman costume in the video. snowman. And then finally, the Green Jelly theme song, like I said, which opens the video but apparently closes the soundtrack.
Yeah. And like I said earlier,
probably makes the most sense.
And like I said earlier, this could so easily be a drop off of a Sailing the Seas of Cheese album.
Easily
track.
A famous track. Yeah, for sure. Very cool. Well, this is great. Anything we want to say to kind of further entice people to go and listen to this thing if we haven't convinced them yet?
I mean, look, I think what kind of really kind of comes to the forefront the more that we sort of drill down on it is understanding how much of a proto, like, this is one of those albums that you can listen to before the other albums, and you can see so much of the musicianship that, again, would really define what was the vanguard for the decade. If you look at how much, you know, Primus and Tool specifically, just take those two bands and look at how much they not only were popular, but also they influenced other bands going forward. And also, look, this, you know, Primus certainly and Les Claypool, somebody that would not shy away from humor, you know, in his kind of music. And, you know, you just look at, you listen to this album, and you're like, okay, well, that's just kind of turned down by half, right? It's just a little bit more ironic and a little bit more detached,
and with one less Pauly Shore.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, look, it's like what's the difference between something like Serial Killer and like Winona's Big Brown Beaver, right?
Yeah.
It's like, it's just the fact that he doesn't scream, it's her vagina in the middle of it, right?
Right. It's a little more subtle. It's like,
Yeah. Whereas I think Serial Killer is like, no, the serial people are killing each other. That's the point of the song.
It's right there in the name.
Yeah. Like, so this is a little bit more over your head with the humor, but these are all things that kind of went on. You know, this is I think a very important evolutionary sort of album. And then I would also just say the other album that I loved was 333, their follow-up, which they released a year later, and that has Carnage Rules and the Bear Song. And I just realized when I was looking at this on that the 333 album on Wikipedia that another place where you might have heard Green Jelly and the Bear Song is Dumb and Dumber. Right. It's on, you know, the two of the great collectors of 90s rock, the Farrelly Brothers soundtracks.
Right. I didn't even realize that. I need to go back and see. It's got to be when they're driving down the highway in the big dogmobile.
Oh yeah.
And it's funny, we were talking about parental advisory stickers. They actually embarked on the parental advisory tour in 2010 with Nashville Pussy and Psycho Stick and Guar, which is awesome.
I guess that is the other band that you would probably link them closest to, is Guar.
Yeah. Right, because it's kind of the comedy metal hybrid. Sure. They're working on a brand new album called Garbage Band Kids, with each song featuring vocals.
You said fecal.
Fecaling vocals. There's definitely some Freud in there somewhere.
Yeah.
Featuring vocals by Manspeaker, but written and recorded by a different touring version of the band for every track. So every different iteration of Green Jello would be performing the backing of a track fronted by Manspeaker, which is hilarious. So there you go. You can go get brand new stuff. Who would have thought you'd be able to get some brand new stuff from Green Jello in 2018? Maybe they're working on it. It hasn't come out yet.
Who knows?
Right. Exactly. Jury. Awesome. If by chance someone doesn't know how to find more Justin Robert Young on the internet and their Google isn't working for whatever reason.
Well, then they can count themselves blessed that they have not been tainted by my nonsense. You can find so much more of me at twitter.com/JustinRYoung, all social media really at JustinRYoung, and then I'm streaming live on Twitch doing talk shows and talking about politics and comedy and professional wrestling at twitch.tv/JustinRYoung, and then of course Night Attack is the big comedy podcast that I do with Brian Brushwood every Tuesday. You can find that at nightattack.tv. But really, in my heart and soul, my favorite thing to do is to talk to Brian and Scott every Tuesday. Really, me calming down Scott as he.
I know it really. Yeah, it really is. It's what it's turned into.
It's therapy Tuesdays. Therapy Thursdays. Show notes. Therapy Thursdays is for the rest of the world. Therapy Tuesdays is for Scott.
It's for Scott. Yeah, I'm his personal. Some people have a personal chef. I'm his personal political commentator, stress reliever.
Right. Oh, it's funny. It's funny. Yeah, I look in the show notes on Tuesdays to see if he's penciled in some ideas of what he wants to bring up with you. And I can tell by the number of spelling errors in the show notes for that point how angry he is about something.
Yeah, whenever he's very, very angry about something, you can type it in there. But, political. TMS is always such an absolute blast. And I'm super looking forward to whatever the Vegas thing is, which I still need to at some point get into the Slack and talk to you
about. Yeah, you do. That's great. And we've got the other project too that is coming out first quarter this year, which
it's rapidly approaching.
That's right. So you think you've got the talent to be America's next top podcasting idol, which will feature you as one of the judges. So more about that when the Kickstarter launches and when we get a little bit closer to getting that stuff together. Great. Well, Jury, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on here, man.
Oh, any time. I would love to continue to talk about some of the best albums that I love so much.
Very cool. Excellent. Well, that is going to do it for this edition of You Gotta Listen to This, a little subset of Soundography. On behalf of Hammond Chamberlain, this is Brian Abbott saying we'll see you next time right here on Soundography.
Part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.